Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you
for your next adventure.
Okay. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, Ash.
Hey, Mr. David.
Hi.
First of all, I want to thank you so much for carving time out for us this morning. So everybody who's listening, David has already come to us from another event. He's in high demand. Actually, two events we just learned, which hopefully you'll indulge us and let us know what last night's event was. But this morning, you were the keynote speaker for Smart Start of New Hanover County, right?
Yep.
Annual breakfast fundraiser.
You bet.
They had bacon.
They had bacon and quiche.
Oh. Bacon and quiche.
They balance each other.
Yeah, they do. You eat the bacon on top of the quiche.
Yeah, right.
We're in. Okay, so I want everybody to know a few things about David before you get going, Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
We are sitting here with a giant, a leviathan of underwater exploration.
Great word, leviathan.
Well, most of it is COVID weight.
I mean, if you could see this guy, if walls could talk, this is from his TED Talk website. Okay. Cause he's done many TED Talks and had the videos and the whole cool thing. But
one of the highest watched.
Yeah. Now that I put it on loop for the last 2 weeks.
Good for you.
You're welcome. But he's a pioneer in ocean exploration, an enthusiastic ambassador between the sea and those of us on dry land, which I think is a really awesome introduction, but it's also fairly modest, meaningful.
And I don't know if I'm an ambassador for people with the sea or my ambassador for the sea creatures, people.
I think the sea, my take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can speak to you better than I can, but it's ambassadors for the sea creatures to people.
Okay. But I work for them. In other words.
But I think you're a mediator of sorts.
Though, kind of,
because,
right?
Yeah, where you're an ambassador, but also a mediator. You're always trying to relay what you're learning and what you're finding out to the people that you work for, but also the rest, the general public, so that we can be aware of this great thing called the ocean. Okay. So can we also just say another couple of things, just a couple more things.
Just two.
That he was on the expedition to map out the Titanic.
Yep.
And that he was part of the expedition that helped found Air France.
Successfully.
Successfully.
Yeah, they found that sucker.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that in a while.
So he's passionate about the relationship between humanity and the sea and makes a call to each of us to recognize the ocean's critical role in providing the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat.
And I just wear the fish t-shirt. That's what I do.
That's important.
And you'd be surprised how many times I mix that up. The water we eat, the air we drink.
The catchphrase just gets jumbled.
Get it right.
Well, we're going to talk about all these things today with you. But first, let's get into our post-session notes.
And that's where we talk about what we've done in the water since the last time we talked.
Right. So typically, Laurel will talk about surfing and her last surf. I'll talk about the next free dive I'm going to engage in. And you'll talk about something even cooler than both of those things put together.
No, I don't know about that. Cool is cool. But yeah, let's hear. Go ahead.
Well, he's our guest. Shouldn't he get what you want to start and break the ice for us?
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of breaking the ice, so you might have heard I just got back from Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And so I went from 83 degree water to 53.4 degree water. Mm-hmm. And that was just a little bit of a awakening. And it took a little bit of strength of character. Thank you.
Which you have plenty.
Which I have plenty to get back out there and suck it up.
You got a new wetsuit though.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. I wanted to just plug Buell wetsuits because when I pulled down the top of my wetsuit, so I'm coming out. I've already surfed. I'd bought this. Well, it was a gift for Christmas. It has polka dots up top. But as I'm pulling it off, inside is pink. right when I pull it off my chest, on the chest, written so that I can see it when I look down, is a Joan of Arc quote that says, you don't need to, something about, don't be afraid, you were made for this. And then, so I'm like, heck yeah, I'm badass. And then I'm pulling it down, shimmy, 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 right at the hardest part. You're like getting it over the hips and you pull it past the knees, and on each knee, facing up to me, are smiley faces. On each knee patch.
It's the little things, right?
I was just like laughing when I was coming out of my wetsuit, which is probably the furthest of what you're usually doing when you're coming out of your wetsuit.
Yes, the hardest part of my day is the wetsuit on and off is definitely the hardest part of my day.
Okay, so that's my post-session note.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You want to do a David post-session note sandwich?
Yeah.
You on one side, me on the other.
That sounds good.
What have you got in the water? Yeah, you're the good stuff. We're just the bread.
All right. Oh, so I should just... But you said since the last time, but I don't know when since the last time was, but I can...
Well, what's coming up? You could do what's coming up next.
You could do that. Or
The next big thing is back to Titanic to finish some of the things. You know, a lot of people will say, oh, you're going back to Titanic? Why? A lot of stories on Titanic, and everything kind of up to now has been touristy. So, and a tourist, if you're paying a lot of money to go to Titanic, you want to see the bow, you want to see the bridge, the grand staircase, the propellers, and that's what you see. And the next one does the same, next one does the same. But in between all that stuff, there's so much to be looked at. I mean, 2,000 some odd passengers, they've all got great stories to tell. And Titanic's like a time capsule.
Wow.
So we learned something historical from that. Also, something that interests me is Atlantis, not the people, the city that lives under the water, but these people called the Minoans that lived on the island of Santorini. Back then it was called Thera. And and on Crete, but fascinating people. They had multi-story buildings. They had hot and cold running water, beautiful jewelry, beautiful murals on the walls. And the island blew up, Santorini, and they escaped. Most of them, we think, escaped to Crete, but we're just finding out who they were. And when I look at the murals, it's just so amazing. Like, as I said, they were fun-loving people. And so that's another thing that's got me interested. And then there's the other perennial things, like how do we better describe climate change and the role of oceans? But I'm trying right now to focus, you know, the oceans, you can be excited because you're exploring and discovering new things almost always, and that's great, very exciting. But then there's a flip side, which is the important side, like what is this ocean, what does it mean to us, and how do we get to know it better? So a little bit of both of those things. And in the meantime, spending time in my garden with my roses and dahlias, although my dahlias made me mad last year, so I'm threatening them with
termination.
Out you go.
You know, a nice stern threat goes a long way, especially if you have your scissors in your hand.
You know,
like you better listen to me.
Yeah, or else, no, you got to pull them out by the roots.
Just get rid of them.
This world beneath this has nothing to do with the oceans directly, but this microbe, the microbiome.
Yeah.
That world is exploding with interest.
Right. And you know, when I first became interested is listen, I'm going to say it, the Joe Rogan podcast. I'm not a listener because I saw his stand up once and I thought, never mind. However, he has some really interesting guests.
Paul Samets was one of those guests.
The mushroom guy.
Mushroom guy.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, I listened to all 2 hours, which is a big feat for me.
Yeah.
That's a lot of listening.
Yeah.
But
Paul's amazing. And that world is, it's funny, the most conservative people I know, well into their 80s, are saying, you haven't tried mushrooms yet? And microdosing. But beyond that, the fungus, there's this whole world that we don't see that lives in the roots of trees and plants, and that it communicates back and forth. Wow.
It made me think, well, maybe Avatar had it right to begin with.
You know? That's right.
That is cool. And what's interesting about your post-session note, well, one of the things is that you were talking a lot about being interested in the history of the Titanic and the people and all these things. But if you were to watch one of your TED Talks, it's all about the creatures.
You know, you love the first TED Talk. I've given actually, I think, 8. But TED was sold in the middle of one of my mentors is the guy that started TED, Richard Werman. And with him, I think there were 6 TED Talks. And then he sold it to Chris Anderson. I had 2 others. But my first TED Talk, I walked out on stage and I said, we've got the best images of Titanic you could ever see. And I'm not going to show you any of them. And, you know, that kind of shocked the audience. And I like that, you know, shocked them. But I showed them for the first time on this giant screen, these bizarre animals that looked like they came out of a dream. I mean, actually, you couldn't dream them up because we've never seen them before.
It's science fiction, the animals you see.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that I could say nothing. You know, like the octopus, one of the talks, the 16 million talk people viewed as an octopus that camouflages itself. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to say anything. I could have just sit there and let the film run. And you know.
Well, in the films, you are narrating, but it's all about the imagery. You're not having to describe a lot. It speaks for itself.
Yeah, I'm cheating, kind of, getting it to easy.
Yeah, I was thinking. Thanks. I was thinking about this guy.
You're supposed to argue with me, but your words.
He is a hack.
Your words. Great. Supposed to say your words are magical.
So.
We'll link those.
Let's go to the Injustice now.
What was your...
My possession note. Yeah, we can just go through it briefly. I'm going to the Florida Springs this Friday. Again, I've been there many times. Have you explored the Florida Springs before? Mm-hmm. It's worth a go. We've got a big full class, and we're going to go spend a couple of days on the back end diving with Bruce Mock, because we were, I'm pointing at Jen right now, because she lives right next to Logan Mock Bunting, his brother. So we're just going to dive, look for manatees, let the kids go nuts. And then we're going to see rocket launch on Wednesday. Anytime we're in Florida, my husband and I normally sail with our family in the winter months down in the Caribbean. And every time we're sailing through, we try to
time it
for a launch and just go as close as we can with the boat.
Nighttime, daytime, both times.
Both times, all the times, yes. This time is going to be evening, and I think the significance of this launch is that it's the first one that is going to be taking passengers, like exclusively.
It's been a while.
Space tourism. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go check that out.
Yeah.
That way,
these days.
20 years from now when I'm super rich, which... I'm running out of time. I do recognize that. Yeah. But I'm on there. I can say, I saw the first one.
Do you ever think of calling NASA or the space people and saying, you know, I've got a favor to ask. Could you
do me a solid?
Yeah. Just have the launch on this date. We'll call ahead of time. Let you know when we're passing by.
I think I shouldn't call NASA, though. I got to go straight to SpaceX these days.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All right, that's my story. Gonna go look at some manatees.
Yeah.
So what about the Injustice?
Because, you know, I think we didn't give David enough lead time, but I bet he could come up with one on the fly.
This is not the mafia thing, is it, that I got involved in olive oil and garlic?
I'm going to let you lead this discussion. We're not implicated.
Yeah.
So every episode between the dive deeper and the possession notes is something called the Injustice of the Week.
Yeah.
And this can be funny. This can be whatever's got your panties in a wad.
It can be Ukraine and Russia. It can be something really significant. Mm-hmm. It could be
related to the ocean.
Yeah. And people.
Yeah. I can mix both. I'm always interested in the state of the planet. Although... And I get in trouble for saying this all the time. I don't consider myself an environmentalist. I mean, if there's an oil spill on the beach, I'm not going to go down there with rags and clean oil off rocks. But I care. Mm-hmm, it's just not inside me. It's not my passion to do that.
You love littering, you know? What?
I do, yeah. I do.
Far be it from us to take that from you.
Mostly at night. And so we're trying to find a way to get through to people, stop polluting the oceans. And, you know, we have to fight, if you want to call it fight, climate change. We have to reduce it somehow and adapt to it. But to me, as long as we're doing what we're doing in the Ukraine, what's the sense in all that stuff? Right. You know, if we're going to sit here and blow each other apart, all this other junk, what does it mean? You know, you're going to go over there now and say, hey, you people in the Ukraine, I know you're in the way, on the way to Poland carrying everything you own, but you, if you're carrying plastic,
no straws. Stop using the straw.
But here, buddy, you've dropped this back here. Put it in your backpack. Be on your way. No, so that's what I consider to be, in a way, it's just ridiculous. You know, I hate aggression. In fact, I want to stamp it out immediately. The one time I feel aggressive is when I see aggression. And, you know, it's a beautiful planet, and we have enough trouble. There's a couple billion people that are barely clinging to life. And because they're over there, as we say, even when they were over here, when New Orleans was pretty much wiped out, it was down there. We have this very strange way of thinking about life on the planet. And I think, me, every life is precious to me.
Yeah.
Until proved otherwise. So that to me would be the injustice of a week.
Of the week.
Maybe even the month.
Yes.
Maybe even
the year.
Beyond. In
perpetuity.
Yeah. Just kind of ridiculous.
You brought up something important, though, that the environmental impacts pale in comparison to
human
atrocities. And they really do. But I'm also glad that we have such a variety of people, that you can have some that are so vehemently dedicated to the environment, you know. So they can keep that ball rolling. While others are over here working on this thing. Because we can't all spread ourselves so thin. We have to, you know, pick something. And for some people, the environment really resonates. It reminds me, I used to be an environmental consultant, which is like the dark side of environmentalism, you know. But anyway, one of my friends there, I would get so mad at people littering cigarette butts. Like, it just drove me crazy, and I couldn't manage.
Sometimes you're out the window of the car and lit rolling
on the beach.
Across.
Yeah.
You watch the sparks fly at night. Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm freaking out and all this stuff. And I said, well, how do you feel about it, Brent? Because he's really in, you know, into making an impact. And he said, I've got bigger fish to fry than a cigarette butt floating in a mud puddle. You're like, there are so many more significant issues out there. And I thought, well, yeah, sure. I guess I need to keep some perspective.
I should tell him not many big fish left. So the bigger fish he's frying, he's
going
to
be
not so big anymore.
He needs to slot limit his interest.
I am impressed with people that are that dedicated to the environment. Sylvia Earle in the oceans is one that's really been beating it into me that we kill the oceans, we kill ourselves.
Yeah.
20, 30 years ago, I thought that was nonsense. You know, it was just Sylvia doing her thing. But now, you know, when we see fish in the middle of the ocean that have plastic bits in their stomach and pharmaceuticals in their flesh, flame retardants is a big one in their flesh. I start thinking, wow, you know, it's hard to believe that we've managed to infect this, like bacteria on the planet.
Yes.
We've infected the whole place. So, yeah, so people like Sylvia that can make you react and to something like this to take action are invaluable as far as I'm concerned.
But I also agree with something you said. I think we can't think of it as going to war for our planet against these things. I think you just start mitigating their impacts until there's a solution that's...
Yeah, I caught myself because I don't want to get in trouble because, you know... The planet's changing, dynamic planet. So the continents move. They do at the same rate your fingernails grow. And when they move apart, they make oceans between them. When they come together, they make mountains. But they've been doing that for 5 billion years. Crash, stretch, crash, all that junk. So the face of the Earth is always changing. And likewise, the climate has been changing for billions of years.
Right.
So when I see these things that say fight climate change, oh my God, you know, why don't you start with day and night? Let's fight day and night. Why don't we? And we kind of have with lighting that we have. But, you know, you can't stop climate change. You wouldn't want to stop climate change. What you want to do is minimize our own impact.
Right.
And to me, it comes to pollution. Stop putting junk on the ground
That's going to end up in the ocean.
It ends up in the ocean, yeah. And it, the worst part is it comes in the form of clear water. You know, it comes off farmlands, golf courses.
And it's
carrying death to the sea. And it's tough, too, because it's incremental. It's not like an event, like an oil spill. The media doesn't care that much. It's clear water. What am I going to show? So one of the most important things to us is pretty much, you know, just doesn't get headlines. So do we need to fight climate change? Well, yeah, in a certain ways, sure. We want to just, again, fight our urge to just pollute the atmosphere and the oceans. And then figure out, you know, we're already in this mess with climate. And we can begin to figure out where the Earth is heading with climate. Changes all the time, and then go with the flow, you know, try to adapt to what we see coming. So it's a bit different from just stop everything. You know, just,
yeah, well, and I think we use some of the technology that we're learning. Like, I'm sure when they came up with Roundup, they really didn't think about how long that was going to stay in the system. Mm-hmm. Or plastics, you know, that was the latest, greatest thing. So easy, you know, oh, this is a wonderful new tool that we're going to use. And now we're like, oh, my God, there's plastic on the beach. Yeah. So.
Well, flame retardants, when we say we don't want our kids burning in their beds or in their car seats.
So we don't.
We don't want that. But somehow it breaks down to dust and the dust gets blown out to sea and then because of bioamplification. We get sea lions that can't be lit on fire. You know, they're flame-proof.
Oh, my gosh.
But toxic levels in some of the marine mammals of flame retardants. So that's one of the things that we do. You know, when I was growing up, it was DDT. I was talking about that earlier.
Yeah,
that I used to, as a child, get soaked in DDT from head to toe. eat apples and say, well, these apples make your mouth tingle.
I like it.
Yeah. So
who needs mushrooms?
But also, right. But, you know, the other thing was that in the 60s and the 50s, maybe into the 70s, we used to explode nuclear bombs in the ocean to test them. Insane, you know. And you could say, well, back then we didn't know, but not anymore. Those days are gone. Now we do know.
Right.
So we'll see what happens next.
Well, I think you just did a great lead in to the dive deeper section, which Ashley aptly titled What We Don't Know.
It's not about that mafia thing again, is it, with the olive oil and the
No. We're gonna go even deeper.
Yeah.
And everything in our podcast sounds like one big pun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I say big pun, I have to say to those out there listening, I don't mean the rapper.
Is that a name? Big Pun?
Oh yeah, Big Pun. Oh, if my brother's listening, he'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Probably involved in gang violence, that mafia stuff. Here we are, full circle.
Oh my gosh. Mm.
So since we're diving deeper, I'm going to start it out with a quote that you mentioned being particularly meaningful to you by Marcel Proust that says, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. But I would contest that you're doing both. You're literally seeking new landscapes and
giving everyone
new eyes. Yeah.
Now, that guy, I would say he's a French philosopher, but he's done a lot of work and it's very complicated to translate and to understand. And so when I give that quote, people think wow, this guy's into that stuff. I got it from a greeting card from Mary Engelbrecht.
You didn't have to disclose that, you know. You could just tell everyone, I'm a genius, I read Proust.
Every day. No, that's where it came from. You know, the more you think about it, and actually the quote translated is better than the greeting card. It's really a wonderful quote. I don't remember it now, sadly, but it's more elaborate. But the same, the gist is the same. So it's not so much in finding those new landscapes as it is in how you think about it. How you think about the landscape. And, you know, technology. Well, think about it. With our technology, with telescopes, we can see the infinite, the edges of the universe. With our microscopes, you can see the other way into down into the atomic nuclear level of material.
Infinite. Amazing. In the other direction.
Yep. And then with our computers, we can stop a lightning bolt in its tracks and walk around it in 3D or a raindrop. Or you can watch glass flow because it's a liquid over time faster. And yet, so those are all things technology has brought us. Those are all the new new views that we have from technology, but hasn't made us think any differently about, you know, you think that's an incredible opportunity that we have, and yet do we take advantage of it? No. So I think, you know, what Marcel had to say is that let's stop and think for a bit about what we're seeing here and what does it mean to us. Galapagos, I've been there many times, and when you go there, it's an amazing place. But they give people a checklist of birds and lizards and whatnot. And the minute that boat, they get off on that boat, boom, they're gone. You know, check, check. I got it all. I got the butterfly. I got the owl.
People love a checklist.
Just sit your butt down here and watch what happens around you. You know, it's too bad. But I'm also one of the people that say, put the camera down and, you know, be present. Be at that spot.
Be in the moment.
Be in the moment. Yeah, so important. It took me a long time to learn that, 30 years, maybe 40. But yeah, I understand the value of it now.
Yeah, and the way that our culture is organized these days, it's counterintuitive to put the camera down. Mm-hmm. Because your first impulse is, capture it.
Yeah, I want to post it.
Capture it. Mm-hmm. Post it. Mm-hmm. But I find a lot of times, we were just talking about this before David got arrived, that social media, like Instagram, that's just full of images. It's overwhelming. It becomes meaningless.
A TikTok, same kind of.
Right. Hmm. So there's no depth.
Right. It's entertainment in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
It's an overload, I think, of information. You know, like when I think about kids, this is kind of what I wanted to ask in my next question, is just what they're being exposed to so young, having this glut of information that's not meaningful in any way. So, you know, what we see is with young kids that have a hard time focusing, a lot of times it's this chaos that's around them and they don't have a hard time identifying what do I need to focus on or where should I put my focus if there's constant chaos. Mm-hmm. And I think with the cell phones and the technology today that's like really having an impact. But what I wanted to ask you, which I thought it was really cool that you were talking and sharing at the Smart Start
for
New Hanover County, and you know their mission is to help children be prepared by the time they get to school. And I was amazed that you were not, I would have expected David to have been this great student. I don't know, Ashley, if you read that, but
yeah, I did read about his beginnings as a student.
Yeah, and so I thought, wow, so you didn't start off doing great in school, and I was curious. I know you were reading the National Geographic magazine that re-sparked your imagination or your passion, but how did you? And then you said you were able to go back to school after being the manager of a shoe store, and you had this like laser focus. Yeah. And how do you think that it went from not having focus and then being able to manage your focus?
Well, as a child, I had that drive that I wanted to explore. Even in my earliest that I can remember, I was crawling around in the dirt in the back of underneath our porch, looking at fossils.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And then later in life, and all that time in elementary school, I was getting my grades were horrible. Mm-hmm. But what hurt more was these check marks that I spoke out of turn. I disturbed others.
Me too.
Didn't work too bad. Yeah, I know. I'm proud of that. It's great.
Like right now.
Now I'm proud of it. Yeah. Now that he's saying it.
Every single year, every single semester, I would have to take that home to have my parents. And it was painful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to be, I thought, a scientist because Galileo and Gallo were obviously related.
Yeah.
So I thought that's what I wanted to be. So I would be outside with my telescope every night and I'd be making model rockets and all sorts of stuff. I read Kon-Tiki when I was in elementary school about these guys that sailed across the Pacific to Easter Island.
That's why you hate sailing.
The balsa raft that was falling apart. That's right. And so I was surprised when I got into high school, president of the Math and Science Club, president of the Rocketry Club. First talk I gave was Structure of the Universe. I still crack up at that. structure of the universe. Might as well start big.
And what age was that? Just not to derail 16, you, but
16, 15.
Yeah, so you knew a thing or two about.
Yeah, it was evolved by. It was the 70s, so I don't remember much of it. Or actually, late 60s. I was surprised when my guidance counselors and my teachers said, "You don't have what it takes to go to college, let alone become a scientist. So you should do something else." And I still choose for 7 years. I loved it. Still love it. Maybe I'll do it again. I don't know. I'll sell Louboutin shoes. And it was painful. But one day I was looking in the shoe department. I was standing at the desk like most shoe department salesmen do, flipping through a National Geographic. And there was a picture, a magazine, with a picture of a submarine, an underwater mountain. And that picture about these three people in this little tiny speck on this giant mountain exploring the deep. I didn't get smarter, but it pushed some button that brought me right back to Thor Heyerdahl and Kon-Tiki, right back to those early days.
Wow.
And I looked at it and I said, that's what I want to do. It was one of those things that it just clicked, and I knew it was going to be tough. And it was, I right across the mall, the parking lot kind of, from where I sold shoes was the State University of New York at Albany. So I took that magazine over there. And I started asking some people about it. And instead of, I was lucky, you had the right people there. In fact, one of the people that was involved in that article happened to be there.
Happened to be.
Yeah. Wow. And it was a lucky thing because I was welcome. There were no stupid questions. And from there, from that point, 2 years, had my bachelor's, made my first dive in the sub, and gave my first paper at an international meeting. None of it was easy. I watched the sun rise and set more than once from my office multiple days. Some days I was up two days in a row, two nights, some days three.
Were you working at the store during the whole time?
Yeah, shortly. I did some part-time stuff.
Okay. But you were audacious. You had audacity.
I was also stupid. I mean, I was living. I remember times where I would have $2 in my pocket for 3 days. It was horrible.
But necessary, worth it.
Well, yeah, it was work. It was a lot of work. And it's the thing I want people to understand is I didn't get smarter. I just got directed and my passions came alive because of that one article.
And I would say even the right people being lucky. In the right place at the right time.
My entire life has been the right and making a decision. To go left at the fork or right at the fork. Made a lot of mistakes, I think.
Sure.
I made mistakes. A lot of decisions I don't regret, but could have led into a more... For instance, I knew Jeff Bezos when he was just starting Amazon. And I knew Sergey Brin and Larry Page when they were starting Google.
They asked you to go in and you said no.
No, and I was at the same strategic planning meeting where they were asking people for money. To Jeff, I'd say, everyone loves bookstores and no one's going to put a credit card online. It's not going to happen, Jeff.
Darn.
And to the Google boys, I said, what's this Google? We have Netscape. We don't need any Google. And I would actually hide from them. I'd see them walking up the path and I go, oh, God, here comes that guy.
Yeah,
again.
You would. They were like the high school teachers to you. No, you can't do that.
Yeah, right. You're too stupid to do this. Anyway, a lot of people I met by luck, the founder of TED and on. It's all about people. That's a very good point. That it really is not just my own passions, but meeting the right people at the right time. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is minimal part of your story, but I think that 7 year gap, those gap years were probably pretty formative. Because the program that kids are pushed into now is you got to do this, you got to achieve that, you got to go to college, you got to do this. And some people aren't ready, especially if they're a low performer in school. They're not ready for the college atmosphere, but it doesn't mean they're going to continue to be a low performer. They just haven't found how to navigate school or...
Yeah, learning how to win. I always called it learning how to win. Learning and I never quite win. Got it.
Or even the bell system. Next class. Next class.
God, I hate you know, you're so making it's, me cringe right now.
Right. So many of us were not we're not necessarily designed to be in that atmosphere to learn.
Right. I certainly wasn't.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and I learned a lot from the shoe department because I was having to deal with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to say being a salesman, but it was more than that. It was, I always had it like, this person wants my help. They're looking for something and I'm going to help them.
Awesome.
So in science, I found to be the same thing. It was always kind of selling an idea, selling a theory.
It's interesting you say that because I've done different jobs and this and that and been involved in different things. And I never, I always look back on just my years waitressing mm-hmm. through college. And then even after college for a little bit, I look on those years fondly because I actually enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed serving. The response yeah. I got for people. Yeah. I enjoyed serving and mm-hmm. I enjoyed also the challenge mm-hmm. of selling them a little bit,
yeah.
telling them this is what you want. Trust me, it is delicious. You don't want that.
Yeah,
want that.
Right.
And it was a game and it was fun and everyone left happy. And
I'm still that kid that had trouble focusing, although you learn how to hyper focus with ADD. I learned how to hyper focus. But I'm still that person. You know, people still say, let's not invite Gallo to this meeting because we'll spend the entire time looking at his iPad. he'll disturb us, talk, we won't get anything done. So in a way, my teachers were kind of right. And also a scientist has to focus on one thing pretty much mm-hmm. their entire career. You focus on, that's what you do.
Wow.
I study zebrafish. If you move out of that little corridor, you're in big trouble in science. Hmm. That's what you do. And I could never do that. Never.
You made
never.
A big corridor.
Yeah.
You have a big corridor.
No, I no. did because I followed my own passions, you know, where, and I never knew. You know, the good part was that my ADD didn't let anyone influence me with rules and regulations. I was, they couldn't get through this thick skull. That, and I didn't know anything but and move fast, go fast, follow your dreams. So they had to catch up with me, but cool. It wasn't easy. It still wasn't easy. It was tough to do.
How rewarding. The submarine, I'm particularly, well, I want to talk about Shackelford Ship too, but I wanted to ask about the submarine because
yeah.
I went on a sub one time,
mm-hmm.
but we only went 500 feet.
Atlantis, one of those subs?
No, it was a home build.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I was in Honduras and there's this crazy guy out there who had built this sub.
Mm-hmm.
And after one of the freediving competitions, we won a trip. My husband and I won a trip on the sub. And of course, we left our kids mm-hmm. with my brother. And I thought at the time, we're not going to return. This is the last time we're going to yeah. see our daughter. This is terrifying.
I'm surprised you did, yeah.
But right. I went anyway because, again, I mean, like you, I have a thick skull.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we got in there and he cranked up the Pink Floyd, I thought, I don't know if this...
Dark Side of the Moon.
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly. Right. I don't know if this is a positive way to start the experience or if I should be really scared.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome, though.
Yeah.
It was super cool. I was only disappointed we weren't deeper. I could still see light, and I thought, that sucks. You yeah. know, I'm yeah. getting ripped off
it
right
does.
Now.
Yeah, when you go deeper and you know what's coming, you pass through that photic zone, we call it, where you have that light dentist office blue, and then you go mm-hmm. deeper, and it gets slowly darker, and then all of a sudden, boom, black.
I wanted the black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I never got the black,
especially
though.
With Pink Floyd. I went Pink Floyd, too. Now I graduated to Led Zeppelin.
Nice.
But I think when I listen to Pink Floyd now, Dark Side of the Moon, that THC residual comes out of my bones.
Pores.
Yeah.
Well, that's what worried me about this experience. I thought, is this guy okay to drive? Because I'm really thinking at 500 feet, if something were to go wrong, could I ascend? I don't think I could ascend 500 feet.
Well, I'm just wondering why you and Ren didn't at least split the odds, like one of you go down at a time. So at least your kid wouldn't lose both parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in retrospect, that probably would have been the best.
I was at a dive once. It was the last dive of a bunch of dives. And so the pilot sits in the middle, looks forward, and then you've got an observer on either side. I was on the right side. And again, it's 2.5 hours to the bottom. It's an incredible, it's trippy to get, because you're looking out the window at all these incredible things. But sometimes you just want to lay back and relax.
Mm-hmm.
And I laid back and I was watching the pilot for some reason in the dim glow of a red light. And I said, he's talking to himself, looking out the window,
yeah,
staring out and talking to himself. I thought, wow, that's really weird. And then
the oxygen in the sub went and then he cranked it up, which was almost worse because the oxygen. Oh my God, we're going to ignite, self combust. And the best part was, so I kicked the guy next to me. I said, keep an eye on this guy. Talking, what was he talking to outside the window? Some creature that was out there in the
No, that would scare me though. Yeah, I'd be like, okay.
But the best part was when he took out some Kaloom sticks and was smearing it on his body. So I thought maybe he's communicating with the bioluminescence with the jellyfish. Could be. I'm one of you.
Well,
We have to go out there now. We have to get out of the sub and be with them.
Well, we already talked about the mushroom connection. Mm-hmm. He was making his rainbow connection.
Yeah, so bizarre. But yeah, it's that dark world is. But hey, you went places that you could normally not go. 500 feet.
I couldn't go there on my own. Nope, and I'm not going to do it on a scuba dive of any kind. No. So that was pretty cool. I was surprised to see many of the same species that I see.
How
up
long
there.
Did you stay under the sea?
I'm trying to think of how long. I can't remember the round trip, but we had to be at least 2 hours.
Yeah,
maybe three. Mm-hmm. It was a
quite a long time.
Well, he makes money finding these rare shells.
Oh,
like fossils and shells, and he sells them on the market to collectors. So that's what he was doing while he was taking
this. Manipulator on the front.
There is.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty elaborate. Actually, that's pretty good.
Well, when I say home build, I know that sounds scary, but he's a pretty smart guy. Mm-hmm. It had the manipulator. We saw him stuffing the bag with things, and that's what we did. And
yeah, you're here to talk about it, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's oddly enough, I shouldn't say this, but there, I don't know of any serious disasters in research subs, small subs.
Which is surprising because it just looks like they're going to explode
implode. You cannot give the ocean any chance. Even a fingernail scratch in a window, we have to replace the window because want to give the ocean any chance of taking over.
No, yeah. No.
All right, Ash.
That's scary. Okay, yeah, we're running out of time, but I mean, Shackelford, and they found the ship, and you're going to go anyway, right?
No, it makes me laugh. You call him Shackelford. It's Shackleton.
Why did I call him Shackelford?
Well, because I call him Shackelford. And people say, are you looking for Shackleton? I say, no, I'm looking for Shackelford. Not Shackleton. Everyone can find Shackleton. Shackelford, who knows where he is? Yeah, that was...
You need to be looking for Shackelford's ship because Shackleton's was found.
Yeah, I know.
Time to move on.
Creeps. That was an incredible achievement. Twice I had a team together. You have to raise a lot of money, $15 million maybe, to get a good start because it's in the Arctic. It's under the Arctic ice. You've got to get through the ice. That means a lot of money on icebreakers and airplanes and all that stuff. But twice we were ready to go. The last time would have been with Jim Cameron, the director, who's a genius in the ocean. And this group, we heard rumors that there was another group that was on its way out. So that kind of ends fundraising. You can't go to someone and say, hey, we need $5 or $10 million. Oh, but yeah, there's this other group. That's
to be second. Yeah.
So, and I didn't think they'd find it. I don't know if I was hoping they'd find it, but they did.
And, they found it.
They did. And gosh, it was not easy. And the images are superb and good for them. Yeah, so So Shackelford is what I'm looking for now. Last seen in Valparaiso with a bottle of God knows whatever he was drinking. He headed up to the mountains. That's the last he was seen, Shackelford.
Well, I think it was. I think I did you a solid by
reminding me of Shackleton.
Reminding you that you should be.
So when people say you'd never found Shackleton, no, I wasn't looking for Shackleton.
Exactly.
An out. Well, I love when I listen to some of your talks that you describe the ocean environment as a symphony.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could share, in your opinion, maybe which instrument, or maybe it's not just the ocean, but the...
We're part of the system.
The whole part of the system. What instrument is most out of key? And I guess the obvious answer would be us.
Well, yeah.
But, or is there just too much exploration at this point to say that's not been done, maybe, would that be something that would...
Sure.
I guess if before we decide what to do first, mm-hmm. we have to find out what yep. else is there.
Yep. And you know, here's the deal. So in the oceans, the record of Earth history is at the bottom of the sea. It's in mm-hmm. the rocks of the sea. They're striped. Oceans have these magnetic stripes.
Yeah.
They're gorgeous. In the sediments of the sea, in the coral of the sea, in the ice caps, it's all there. You can find record of Earth history that goes back hundreds of thousands, sometimes more than a million years. And when we look at that, we see rhythms and cycles and rhythms and cycles. And they're big ones and there's tiny ones. And some are, the big ones are 100,000 years and 40,000 years and 20,000 years, 10,000 years. But none of, so we can tell because of the Earth's orbit, we can say in 10,000 years, here's what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't, is not what we need. We need the next 10 years or the next 100 years.
Yeah.
And that means being able to get in the ocean and sample all those things with more accuracy and to be able to analyze them with more accuracy. It's a lot more work, but it's worth doing. And, you know, I think of it, to me, everything I see is rhythms and patterns and day and night, seasons, and beyond that. It's just a beautiful thing. And everything spirals, galaxies spiraling around. To cope with my ADD, I like a story, mm-hmm. beginning, middle, end, and then I hang the facts on that story. But I need that storyline.
Yeah.
And so I'm this thing about rhythms and cycles and music, symphony of cycles, I like that. And if you imagine a symphony like, who knows what, Beethoven, mm-hmm. and we show up at the very end of that symphony, last bit of it, and we're clanging pots and pans.
You know. Well, we're the only part of the symphony
yeah.
that gets to choose.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
are we you know, everything else is doing what they were created to do.
Yep.
Yet we get to choose, like, oh, am I going to be nice to this person or am I going to kill them? You know?
Right. Yeah. And yeah, no, we do. And it's sad. And you know, then money comes in.
Mm.
Money and power comes into the equation. And that really mucks things up because of all the things that are not natural, money, mm-hmm. the system of money is not so natural. So, and that's a great motivation.
Well,
but power is very natural.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so is a monetary system because yeah. there's a lot of good that yeah. we do with a monetary system. Mm-hmm. I would say it's probably the love of money that gets in the way of
yeah.
of being altruistic and you know, human focused.
Yeah, no, it's right. And you know, I think it always amazes me that we should be absolutely gobsmacked. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it means, but yeah,
I like that word.
Yeah,
when we go out at night and there's the moon and the stars, the constellations.
Yeah.
And that's amazing, but we're not, you know, because we're used to it. And then what does that mean? So what? And, you know, if you long exposure, you can turn head toward the North Star and watch the stars spin around. And it's, wow, that stuff is great. It's just awesome. But, you know, we're not impressed with that kind of
We don't stuff. Slow down enough.
We don't slow down. And yet, you know, I think if you go back in time, different civilizations could. The Minoans mm-hmm. could. The mm-hmm. Egyptians could. The Babylonians could.
Native Americans could.
Yeah, they could. They were in tune with the rhythms of
the symphony.
The symphony, yeah. And then, again, like you said, we show up and make a mess out of the whole thing. So it makes it difficult to predict what's coming next because we've mucked it up right now. So
yeah. It's double-edged sword because although we can muck things up, we're also in the unique position to be able to fully 100% completely enjoy it also and appreciate it and study it.
I'm optimistic. I actually am because we know enough now. We can't use that excuse we didn't know.
Mm.
So now enough people know what's roughly what's going on, what our impact is, so we can start
doing something about it.
And young people have got it, I think.
Yeah.
They really are yeah. And you got to thank teachers for a lot of that. Because they really know, you know, more than once I've heard plastic straws, kids saying don't use plastic straws.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, in our town, Falmouth, Massachusetts, no more plastic bottles because we're right on the water.
Yes.
No more single use. But you walk down the row in the grocery store, the same aisle, and it's full of plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about water bottles. Right. These are flavored water bottles. Right. Oh, my God.
Well, we got to, I think it's, we got to not hate the small beginnings, you know, like, okay.
Yeah, it's a step. It's
yeah,
a step.
And it's a eye-opening, okay, there's that. Then our eyes can maybe even see further. But I hate to move us along. I think we need to drift on in.
To the God waters. And actually, that was a really good segue again.
Yeah. Perfect. Applause.
Yeah, you're good at this. We're both believers. And so at the end of our podcast, we always wrap things up through God's lens.
He might be wondering what kind of believers, because he was just at that seance.
Yeah,
oh, right.
Like,
yeah. God. You cast a broad net. That's true. Mm. I was going to ask you, evolution or intelligent design?
It's a hot topic, isn't it?
It is. And then I went, just joking. But
No. It's, you know, here's the deal. Do I believe in God? Yeah. Not the guy in the white robe and all that junk. There's something out there. But both science and religions are human constructs to explain all this junk for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them good, some of them not so good. But if you go back in time to the age of wizards, before humans got a hold of religion and humans got a hold of science, because they both make promises they can't keep with religion, is there a God? Never going to get there. With science, is there gravity, for instance? What the heck is gravity? What's the universe all about? Never going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you go back beyond that, before those things happen, and look at everything as a oneness, that there's only one real story, and that everything's interconnected, and it really is interconnected. You know, you have a gravitational field, and we all have mm-hmm. and we're all pulling and pushing one another. And every time you move, it's changing the gravitational field of the whole universe, really, mm-hmm. in a micro way. So we are all one, and I love that kind of stuff. So intelligent is both.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take the easy way out.
That was a cop out. But the way you talk about your exploration and your experiences definitely made me think that you have some interest in intelligent design anyway, just because you really draw attention to the interconnectedness and you draw attention to the design.
Oh, don't get me wrong.
Things.
When people say, do you believe in God? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can't see the stuff we've seen and not. Impossible.
Well, that's how my faith journey started. It came from nothing, you know, because mm-hmm. I was not believing in anything or thought I did in any way. But one of the scriptures that resonated with me was Romans, you know, chapter 1, verse 20, mm-hmm. where it says, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made. So mm-hmm. that people are without excuses. So we can clearly see through, you know, nature and the creation, how
sure
or wonderful and infinite.
Go ahead, sorry.
No.
Well, I was just going to say, like, when you look at whether it's the depth of the ocean to the Earth's surface, mm-hmm. even to the story, like you said, like having that story be told that's in the stars.
Yeah.
I mean, like how we've designated the stars and the constellations that they themselves actually tell a story of time and existence, and even the depth, the bottom of the ocean, even those little squiggly lines mm-hmm. that tell the story of creation. I mean, it is evident of more than obviously of us.
Yeah, something crazy's happening. I mean,
I pray every day, several times a day. On the way over here, I prayed. I said, please make these people somewhat normal.
Well, you know
we
what?
We did the same about you.
We had the same prayer. We just said, Lord, make us sound more intelligent than we are.
Yeah. Don't let us
flub. Several times a day I do, and I'm always mindful before I go to bed, when I wake up in the morning. It can't hurt, and it goes somewhere. I don't think it goes to Galileo. I think,
Yeah.
We didn't ask you that to put you on the spot, though, just so you know.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't put me on the spot. I'm very comfortable with it. I really am comfortable. You know, science has a lot of failings. So when I hear a scientist speaking out against religion, give me a break. You can't even explain gravity. They can't. Can't explain gravity.
To me, they're kind of the same. The more science we get involved in and see, the more creatures that people like you are discovering, the more my mind just goes, pow.
Yeah. And science
you know, technology, lights are horrible to me because they take away daytime and other things take away seasons. And I just think it's, we're moving further away from the truth, from the rhythms and cycles of life, and going further out on a limb of, you know, if we don't have the technology, we don't know what to do next.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. No, that is scary. Mm-hmm. I have another thing to say, but I know
Well, last time we ever come here.
We'll say it after the podcast.
Yeah. Well, right. We just want to just, first of all, thank you for making time out of your schedule to swoop from one event to the next event, mm-hmm. and then to here. And we are very grateful to have you on the podcast. And you are probably as far as high caliber guests, we're going to brag about this for a long time.
We can only go down from here. So yeah. That's encouraging.
Bradley Cooper, who was really, he's a lesser being.
Well, he passed. Trust me, we tried him. He passed. But, you know, I also want to thank
Jen,
who's sitting over here, for introducing us, and also for your work with Smart Start New Hanover County. I know through this discussion about the ocean and everything, we may have glossed over the important work that they're doing, but I'll be sure to
link that,
which I already have it in mm-hmm. my notes here, and encourage our listeners to get involved in a monetary way with Smart Start. Give them some money so they can keep doing their good stuff.
Absolutely.
What else, Laurel?
That's it. I mean, you know, if you want to give us a review on Apple Podcasts, that's meaningful to us.
Yeah. If it's a good one.
Especially this one.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.